Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We're tonight's entertainment.
Look at my butt. Now look at my front butt.
Wada, 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 wada.
Open the circuit to the wave motion gun. Open the circuit.
Blood chamber pressure increases.
All the ship's energy is now in the wave motion gun.
I doubt anyone here would recognize civic virtue if it reached up and bit you in the ass.
Oh, did I hurt your feelings?
You know, Magneto's right. There's a war coming. You sure you're on the right side?
And, well, hell, I couldn't get out to do anything tonight, so I figured just grab these two out of nowhere and do something. First, I want to do a little touch-up on tonight's show, something that me and Carl forgot. We never forget anything, do we, Carl?
What did you just say? I forget.
But what we forgot is that if you have an all-region Blu-ray player, Arrow Entertainment has beautiful collector's editions of Shivers and Rabbit that you could pretty much get imported just like that.
Yeah, those are really good, too. I did mention that last night. The Rabbit is still available on the DVD. You can still get a DVD. And
yeah,
the rest
you can
of the
find
movies
it
are all available. But don't forget, I also said that the restorative cut of Shivers is on Tubi, and so you can see it there.
Yeah. And with us tonight, half asleep because I woke him up. Why? Doc's like, why the hell did you wake me up? So here he is, half asleep and grumpy, Doc Sludge.
Hey, everybody. Well, I am half asleep, but I'm definitely not grumpy for the moment.
That's no. Because you got Spooky. Spooky's there with you.
Yeah. Actually, I have no idea where he is at the moment, but he's in the near someplace.
Yeah, well,
so
I
here we are with
both
the bullshit. So what are we going to bullshit about?
Well, first thing is I actually got to see Avengers Infinity War. God damn, was that a depressing fucking little movie. People talk about how depressing the DC movies are. You've seen Infinity War, haven't you, Doc?
Actually, I haven't. I have not watched a superhero movie since Guardians of the Galaxy. Because I'll be honest with you, I enjoy Guardians of the Galaxy, but I have no desire to see superhero films. Whatsoever.
Well, this one has all of them in it, and just damn.
Yeah, and I heard it's Star-Lord that fucked it all up. Well, spoilers, of course. I've not seen the movie. I will at one point. I get most of my stuff through the library right next door, so I'm waiting on a bunch of films yet. And that is on the queue.
And there'll be a lot of interesting shit announced this week. Like, Funko's just gone fucking nuts. They've announced a set of Saturday Night Live Pops where there's only one of them I give a shit about.
And that's Rosanna,
and that
Rosanna
be,
again, right?
Yeah, the Gilda Radner Pop. Just so I can say I've got a Gilda Radner Pop. There's only one from that I would love to have gotten. How would you like to, if they did a Bill Murray and her set of those two characters?
Actually, I want Bill Murray as the lounge singer. I want Bill Murray as the lounge singer.
Yeah, but you know what I'm talking about, where they dated each other, and then on
the last episode, they just broke
up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not too familiar with Saturday Night Live at all. Friends with that.
So, they announced some more of the serials, and they announced another exclusive Cthulhu figure, which is lime green. How many damn Cthulhu figures are they going to poop out?
I don't know, but there's... There's one set that's coming out that I want one figure from, and that's a Little Shop of Horrors set. The Little Shop of Horrors set. I want to get Audrey too.
Everybody will want Audrey.
I know that. It doesn't matter. I know it doesn't matter as long as
they get
one.
They got the small one in the tin can, which is a Target exclusive, which means bend over. And that's the one I like, the one where she's in a little soup can, and then there's the regular Audrey 2, and then the blood-splattered Audrey 2. I would have wanted the Steve Martin one, but they didn't put him in his leather jacket or his greased back hair. Why?
Did they put him in the Pharaoh outfit?
Yeah.
Okay, I would definitely get that one, too. Because that is one of the best ever. I have seen that one.
No, it's not any of his cool outfits. It's just him in the suspenders with a pair of pliers.
Oh. Never mind.
Yeah, not his leather jacket or his motorcycle one. Wouldn't that be the cool one, Carl? The one that everyone recognizes him for in the movie?
Yeah, the motorcycle one, for sure. For sure.
And they got an Audrey 2 plushie pop.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I was going to say about Cthulhu. I know that Funko has come out with a bunch of them. Everybody's coming out with them. I mean, there are Cthulhu, books for kids. There's Cthulhu that. I mean, it's just huge. I'm hoping that it's
the weirdest one they announced
money.
The set.
Okay.
Which movie do you think they announced this week for a set? A, Eddie Murphy and the Golden Child. B, Eddie Murphy Coming to America. Or B, just the Eddie Murphy pop, period.
If it's the Golden Child,
Coming to America.
Bingo. It's got Eddie Murphy and Arsenio Hall, and guess which one's going to be the exclusive Chase Pop?
I don't know.
Eddie Murphy in the McDowell's outfit, the only one that's cool from that damn series.
Okay. Yeah, not a movie I'm that crazy about. Now, there's a set that came out that I want once. Shall I introduce this, or do you? Well, you sent it to me via Messenger. There's a Gremlin.
Oh, the Gremlin set, yeah. They got Stripe from the first one, which looks okay. Gizmo, which, and then they have the best one of them all, which is the Pervert Flasher Gremlin. I will have that one.
No, not the best one. Not even close.
Yeah.
Not even close. What's the last one?
The sculpt of that one is ugly.
Okay, the last one.
The sculpt of it is ugly
Gremlin.
Shit, and that's lady, the female gremlin.
Yeah, yeah, that's the one I want. I want her. Okay, no doubt I want her. The whole thing with the end of Gremlin 2, where they do the Busby Berkeley and that sort of thing. And then, of course, all that shit with Robert Picardo. Oh, fuck yeah. It's the Lady Gremlin. Hands down on that set for me.
And honestly, how long do you think it's going to be before the Funko bubble bursts?
I thought it was going to burst a couple of years ago, and it just keeps going. It's going to, one of these days, it's going to pull a Beanie Babies and go, and we're spinning.
Well, you know
right
what? I tell you one thing. Hold on.
What?
One thing about Funko is I really do feel that they've got a pulse on pop culture, and they know that there are all these little, you know, genre groups that like this movie and that movie, and they don't overproduce. That's the key. They're not overproducing. And I think they're going to do just fine. I do. I think they've got a good thing going.
I agree with you, but yeah, there is a few that I bought as normals, like the Hannibal set. And most of those go for like $20 a pop nowadays, easily.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just at a garage sale the other day, which I picked up the flocked version of Swamp Thing for $3. And Steve was telling me the other day it's worth about $25. So I'm actually, I don't really care about the value.
Yeah, $25.
It's Swamp Thing. I'm very happy with it.
Oh, God, yeah. It's a cool-looking Swamp Thing, too.
Oh, yeah. Sure is.
But there's two I'd like to get just because of their gooniness, but I suspect that when they come out, they're going to be a fucking motherfucker to find. And that, well, one already is a motherfucker to find. One is the Alfred Hitchcock pop.
That's very cool.
And the second one is the Del Toro pop.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's both cool. Of the two, I think I'd go with Hitchcock. I think I'd go with Del Toro.
I've got Norman Bates dressed up as his mother, but that came in one of those horror subscription boxes I get every month. I mean, I'm definitely kind of happy with that one.
You mean they put out Mother as a fucking exclusive?
No. It wasn't exclusive.
I'll be back in a second, but that's one of the things that I hate most about Funko.
Well, you know, I'm not nearly the collector you guys are. What few things I have actually Steven sent me over the years and so on and so forth. I'm just not that much of a collector. Now, but there'd be a couple things there that I'd be interested in. But the Gremlin one, the Lady Gremlin one, I'd love to get.
Okay, I'm back. What I hate it is that they know out of four ones they got a really cool variant, so instead of taking that and doing what is logical, which would be paying that as a regular pop, they do this whole limited crap and ends up costing you hundreds to get the cool version of the character you want.
Well, again, that's good marketing. What they're doing is they're taking what, you know, what all the people want, make it very limited, raise the price. It gets cred on the collector's market, and they don't reproduce it. I don't think there's been a reproduction yet of Funko on their collectors. And you know what? They're being really
smart.
No,
they never do repops.
No, they don't do repops. And again, I think
they're really
smart.
But right now
we're
at the era where the suckers are buying most of the pops for an insane fucking amount of price. There's a group of assholes out there making a shitload of money. Like, did overpriced pop guys show up at Monster Bash this year, Doc?
I didn't see very much. One guy had like 3 pops, and that was it. Seriously, there were like no pops.
But you know what I'm talking about, don't you?
I'm a bit foggy at the moment.
He's like the guy that had a table full of pops and everything was outrageously repriced. Like he had a glow-in-the-dark, see-through creature from the Black Lagoon for $100.
Yeah, he was there, when he heard the funniest thing was, I was talking to him about it, and he said, yeah, this thing is even worth close to that. I'm like, why do you have a post for $100? You know.
Yeah. But isn't that how the market's based on the suckers, not the people who actually buy and seriously collect them?
Yeah, it's unfortunate because, like, there's several versions of the 6-inch Godzilla pop that are out that I would like to get because they're really cool looking, but they're either, you know, $60 to $100 or the paint job is effing terrible. Because they just, Funko just got a new Godzilla pop for somebody. I can't exactly remember who.
Yeah.
It was a custom pop.
In all seriousness, Carl, how many people did you save from getting raped at the record shows that you would go to back in the day?
Well, let me put it this way. I'll give you the other sense of it. You know, when I was having some financial problems, I went to sell some albums. Okay? And this is, and I know what I have, right? You know, and I wasn't even getting $1 an album from these guys. And it's like, fuck you. I'll go hungry. You know, dealers, you know, with you stuff, they'll, you know, people that need the money and that sort of thing, they'll wait. And then they'll overprice it to the people that want it. You know, so they do it on both ends, a lot of these guys. And it's unfortunate. You know, I never did that. Never did that.
Yeah, it's like one time I went to a flea market and this woman had a copy of the Shaft soundtrack on LP in crappy condition. And the only thing she asked is she was one of those book people. She wouldn't take any price until she consulted the book.
Oh, yeah. You know, and any guide is always a little overpriced, and plus also, people think, oh, well, I have it, so it's got to be top price, which is bullshit. You know? You said, did I ever save anyone from dealers? I never really did that, but what I did do is if people, if I didn't have something, I would recommend people that were dealers that I trusted and I knew. Okay? And I knew that they wouldn't get rich. You know, and these were friends of mine and people I've dealt with. So I used to do that all the time.
Yeah, it's sad, but most of the people you will deal with in the secondhand market at cons and stuff, they will fuck you hard if you don't know what you're doing.
Well, of course, I'm talking about vinyl. And this is something I did, okay? My sister, this is years ago, found an album at a flea market or a house sale for a quarter. She bought it. Came back, mint minus the Sonics from 1966 on Jordan. The thing was worth over $1,000. Seriously. And so I found out who she bought it from, and I went back to the house and I gave him $25. And I said, you didn't know what you had? Take this because you deserve it. Of course, I didn't tell him it was worth $1,000. But at least, you know, it's better than them getting a quarter from it. I mean, that's the way I was. And I still am to this day.
Man, to be honest, when I went to the FanFest, that con last month, there were like 10 or 12 tables selling nothing but pots. How come collectors and sellers never learn the basic lesson? Sooner or later, that bubble's going to pop, and when it pops, you're going to be stuck with all this merchandise you can't move.
See, and that's the other thing. You're absolutely right about that. It's all about inventory control. And you have to, and it's about turnover. And you know, these guys get all these pops and think that you know, they'll sell them eventually, and maybe they will. But you know, you're really playing with fire if you overstock. Because at one point, particularly with collectibles, it's always going to go down to twos. It's going to break.
That's why I should always have a good, varied stock of different things. If you own like a store, or if you do like, you know, conventions and stuff. I mean, there's you know, people who specialize in certain things. Like, let's say the resin model kits. You know, like a guy I bought a resin model kit from this last Monster Bash. He's got different types of kits. He's got horror, he's got non-horror, he's got fantasy, he's got everything. That's not Monsters and Mayhem, you know. Just not centering on Monsters and Mayhem. I mean, if you've got pops, yeah, sell some pops, but also throw some other stuff in the inventory, like comic books or, you know, silly DVDs or something like that, Blu-rays. Make it interesting, because if you're not selling pops, after that market blows, you're going to need to sell something else.
Absolutely.
The problem is that some people treat collectibles as an investment.
Well, you know, the thing about that.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead and finish, Steve. Sorry.
No, I finished.
Well, you see, the thing about that is, you know what that is? That's gambling. Okay? If you go and you buy something, oh, this is going to be collectible. Well, how do you know that? How do you know they're not going to reproduce it? How do you know that particular Funko Pop, for example, is going to go through the roof? You don't. You know? And so you're playing a bit of roulette. You're playing a bit of poker. Okay? Now, it may do well, but how long is it going to sit before it doubles in value and it makes it worthwhile for you to sell? You know,
all these things
have to be taken into consideration. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah. If you're looking for the best example, and not going to know where I'm going, the 90s comic book boom.
Oh, for shit's sake. You're so right about that. I was ranting and raving about that earlier this week. I mean, back in the 1990s, when my father was still alive, our thing was that we would go down to the comic book shop at the lake and buy comic books. Now, some of these comic books were worth, you know, at the time, their cover price, which at the time was like $1.25. Now, you go a few years, their value would go up, like the Spawn comic books. Spawn issue number one, remember at one time, was like worth $40, okay? And then X-Men, the revamp that they did in the 90s, if you had the giant issue with the fold-out cover, it was worth about $100, okay? 2.5 years ago, I sold off my comic book collection. I could not get pennies on, I could not get more than pennies on the dollar for this comic book. The comic books in the 1990s are worth nothing. Absolutely nothing. The reason why is because the printing companies figured out a very, very cheap way to print, and plus the market was so bad for comic books at that time that they just blasted millions of copies out So there's no rarity whatsoever. They actually screwed themselves by making such a high profit, and then after the whole market was saturated, their profits dropped, and we had a bunch of independent comic book companies close. Another example of a comic book I'll give you that was supposed to have a lot of value was the issue of Superman where Superman dies. It had a foil cover.
Yeah.
It was in the missile wrapped up bag. It came with the collector's cards. I bought like 3 copies because I wanted to read one to my friend, and then keep one for collectibles. It was supposed to be worth a ton of money. You know how much it's worth? 15 cents.
You can get those in a dump bin. I've seen a couple of guys sell those in the dump bin for like in the $3-4 bins.
Oh, easily.
That's how worthless any 90s comic books. No one would touch those with the fucking. If they had the cure for cancer, they'd still not touch those things. That's how badly the market crashed. And it killed indie comic book publishers like the guys you love. It definitely killed Kitchen Sink Comics, Carl, deader than shit.
I know. And the thing about it, and Doc touched on this, overproduction. Okay? So the people that were producing these, and when they say it's collectible right off the bat, that's a sign not to fucking buy it. Right? Unless you're going to read it. Okay, and then fine. You buy for a buck and a quarter or $2.50 or whatever it would be, right? But the thing is, that's not what makes something collectible. When you say it's going to be collectible, run away. You know what makes something collectible? A goof that they don't catch. If it's possibly the last thing ever that somebody did before they died. Or in a case of recording, you know, I'm a record guy, a group that nobody ever heard of, but the one member became famous. Like there's a group in the 60s called Arc 16. Okay, you never heard of them, right?
Right.
Guess who one of the members were? Phil Collins.
Really?
The same goes for $500 to $750 if you have the album.
Yeah, and there was this gag record put out by these guys. I forget what name they used, but it was like, you know what I'm talking about when I say it. It was just a silly recording of Happy Birthday. And there were about 200-300 copies of it made. And people didn't give a shit about it. And you know who those guys turned out to be? And it was their first American recording, and they put it out just to see if they could do it in America?
Okay, who was it?
The Beatles.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And now the damn thing goes for about $500 to $1,000.
Yeah, you know what? That particular one, now that I know what you're talking about, they have never confirmed that it was an American release. They've always said it was a German release, that some were imported to U.S. So there's an argument on that. The first official Beatles was Please Please Me on BJ.
Yeah.
There's also the one on Swan Records, too, and I forget which one that is. But they were right next to each other. That was before Capitol took them over in the U.S.
Yeah, and another one of the most expensive Beatles one is when they're at the biggest, they had a fan club, and for each Christmas, they did a fan club record. For their Christmas. That doesn't sound that spectacular, does it, guys?
No.
Not a big fan of Christmas
albums.
But
one of them, right before they recorded their Christmas single for their fans, They all four got drunk as fuck.
Okay.
And they just rambled on for 5 minutes drunk as hell. With John saying stuff like, thank you for buying our records. That means I can get me a new fancy car now. You know what I'm talking about, don't you, Carl?
No, I don't. I've never heard this.
It was one of their fan club only albums, and Dringo's going around like, I'm drunk, I'm drunk.
I mean, there were definitely fan club records. No question about that. I just don't know. I was never a big Beatles. The only fan club record I have is a Kinks record. That's a one-sided record that they did for their Cleveland group of fans. And that was 66, I think.
I mean, I love being a collector, but I fucking hate being a blue deep movie collector nowadays. Because you see all these companies putting all these bullshit things in the Blu-ray so they can overcharge for them and make you panic. Like that Liquid Sky that you got, Carl?
Yeah.
It was released in a 500-only edition. And your friend is the biggest hater of this word I'm about to use. And, Doc, you'll know what it is because it's your friend that hates this word ever. And what made it special? A limited edition cover, which was only on the first 2,000 copies.
Oh, I hate that shit. That drives me so fucking crazy. That's why.
Is anybody in here on the show right now give a shit about slipcovers?
No.
No. I mean, okay, I'll admit there is one slipcover that I really, really like that I have. It's double card stock. It's on my Blu-ray of Orgy of the Dead. It is a beautiful, beautiful slipcover. I don't care.
I do have one, too. It's not a slipcover, but it was the way it was packaged was that it was you could see this on top of the DVD. Because they had it cut out. And that's the 3D effect cover of Rubber, where you can see the tire kill the chicken.
Yeah.
That's awesome, though.
I like that one.
That's different than causing a panic by overplaying the Blu-ray price by, oh my God, a slipcover. I mean, look at what Vinegar Syndrome did with Corruption. What's the hidden bonus on that, Carl?
Well, by the way, you're starting to break up just a bit, just a tiny bit. Corruption, did you say?
Corruption,
yeah,
the one that I gave you, the Roger Watkins film. What do they have there as a hidden bonus?
Last House on Dead End Street.
Yes, an entire fucking movie. That's something to buy. If I'm going to admit it, I'm a big mark for soundtrack editions.
And you'll love Zombie 3, Zombie 4, and Emmanuel and the Cannibals. And, of course, The Beyond and Cannibal Holocaust.
And don't forget that I just saw this, that Blue Underground is doing a 4K restoration, new edition of Zombie, of Fulci's film,
yeah,
with soundtrack and everything.
Nice.
Yeah, the coolest ones I've got is Dario Gento's opera that Anchor Bay put out. It came with an amazing fucking soundtrack CD. I haven't watched the movie that much, but I've played the holy shit out of that soundtrack. It's fucking good.
Yeah, I got a couple.
And the hardest
of those too.
One to find is a 10 that Anchor Bay put out of Repo Man with the soundtrack. Are you surprised that one sold out within 20 minutes of it hitting the market back then, Carl?
Oh, hell no. Hell no. All you have to do is put an ad on Punk's Not Dead, this Facebook group. You'd sell 2,000 in like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Seriously.
But the weirdest one I've got, and I think, I don't know if I've showed you, showed it to Doc, but I've shown it to you, Carl. It was in the Maniac tin. It came with the CD and a soundtrack CD. What makes it so weird? The motherfucker shaped like Joe Spinell's head. Have
nice.
I shown you that, Doc?
No, you haven't.
I had to show it to Carl because when I said it, he's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah, that's just in the shape of Joe Spinell's head. That's a CD you only put in a top loader.
Yeah.
It works in top loaders. There's nothing it won't work in.
Oh, so it's printed like Joe Spinell's head. Because back in the early 2000s, mid-2000s, Dima Borger found a mini album. And it was on a CD shaped like a skull, and you can only use it in top loaders, because if you put anything else, oh, it'd be destroyed.
No, this one works in pretty much all of them, and it's shaped like Joe Spinell's head, isn't it, Carl? His face.
By the way, if anyone has not noticed, Joe Spinell is an official saint of these podcasts. He is called Saint Joe. So you know, you can sit down and genuflect and get your rosaries and pray to St. Joe.
And I've got
Ace
Experience set that has a soundtrack, too. If it's a movie I love the soundtrack to, I will buy it in a heartbeat. The only one I never did get and I almost got was importing a Region K 2 of the Wicker Man set. It came out like last year. It had like all three cuts and a soundtrack CD. Then I realized it got the whole fucking soundtrack. I bought it off Amazon and put it on there.
Oh. Yeah, now the set, I'm not huge on it because I prefer vinyl. But one of the ones I do have, and we actually did a watch of it, was Dust Devil. And that's got the soundtrack and the docs and everything. I love that set.
Yeah, that's the first release ever of that soundtrack was on that CD.
And that's a killer fucking soundtrack.
Oh, God, yeah. And to all you motherfuckers who are pissed off from Knoxville area that the damn set goes for like $60 to $80 nowadays, Carl?
Yeah, something like that.
There was this fat guy when he was at McKay's, and he seen that the Dust Devil set was there. Try to get you motherfuckers to buy it, telling them, oh, you got to buy this shit. You got to buy this shit. And they're like, oh, I'll just stick this. That's plain bullshit. No, man, you got to buy this. Yes, I did that every time I was at McKay, and there was a copy of Dust Devil there, and someone says, I'm looking for something different.
Here. Buy it.
Yeah, just buy it. What's it about? Fuck you. Just buy it. Watch it. You'll love it.
But, you know, we didn't watch that. It's a great film. A great film.
Now,
the
Dust Devil soundtrack is on right now on Amazon is $79.50 used.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It comes with Dust Devil, the Dust Devil work print, The Secret Unknown, Richard Stanley's documentary on the Grail search. Let's see, what else does it have? Oh, yeah, it has two more documentaries that he did, and a disc of extras, and the soundtrack CD.
Yeah.
And a comic book, and a book of his diary for making the movie. How much was that at Carl when it first hit that Carl?
Was it like $20?
Yeah, $20 for all that. Because how they charge it so cheap is really one of the biggest reasons that Subversive Cinema went out of business.
Yeah.
Because you can just guess, you know, how much money they fucking lost on that set.
Yeah, this is the wrong information, guys. I'm sorry. The soundtrack itself for Dust Devil was $79. You can actually get that set we were just talking about with five discs for $52, of course.
How much?
52.
How much?
52.
Damn, not bad, but still. But there has a DVD, a Blu-ray restoration of it coming out later this year, and hopefully it'll have most of the extras on it.
I hope so. It'd be nice.
You know, there have been a number of things coming out on Blu-ray restorations and that I'm interested in. One I mentioned very briefly last night, but I'm really tempted to get it, is The Mind of Mr. Soames, which I guess was out on VHS, but I don't think it's ever been out on DVD or Blu-ray.
No, I don't think it has either.
No.
Here is a plea to Warner Archives. There's four films you need to put on Blu-ray. I wish you would. It's killing me. One, The Terminal Man. Please put that shit out. Two, Dr. Lowe. Please, please, God, put that shit out. Three, Cruising. Please, please put that shit out. Four, Network.
Yeah, really.
Please, please. And that's another one I wish that they would put the fucking soundtrack out again. Because you can't find the Cruising soundtrack album for under like $60 on vinyl just because it's that rare.
Okay. So I got one for you. Please, please put this shit out. And that would be Paul Mazursky's Tempest with the soundtrack by Stomi Yamashita. Please put that shit out.
Yeah, that would be nice. But the problem is, and we ran into it, this is when I say we soundtrack collectors, ran into this wall from about 88 to 89 on, where the studios would not put out the music soundtracks because no one would buy them.
Oh, Jesus. You know another one they need to put out in a restoration with the soundtrack? Streets of Fucking Fire.
Oh, God, yeah. That one needs a soundtrack remaster.
Oh,
Scott
fuck
Pepper's
yeah.
Putting it out on Blu-ray, though.
Well, that's nice. Yeah, that needs to come out on Blu-ray.
Another company, I'm just waiting for them to die because I want you guys' opinion on this. Guess what movie special edition is coming out this Tuesday?
No clue.
Mac and Me.
Oh, Jesus Christ. I don't know what's
Mac
worse.
And
that or
getting a fucking special edition Blu-ray.
Okay, well, I don't know what's worse. Mac or Me or the double feature of Munchie and Munchies.
Well,
and Dog
yeah,
is
that's
silent.
A tough call.
No,
that's a tough call.
Sorry about that, guys. I had to run off for just a moment. But I'm back.
So what's worse? These are both out now in Blu-ray. Mac and Me or the double feature of Munchie and Munchies. Which one is worse?
Oh, jeez. That's a little bleh. Bleh. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Yeah, and everyone who's excited about it is like, why do you want this piece of shit? Oh, I loved it back in the 80s when I was a kid.
Trust
okay,
me, you're
but
like
you're
it.
Not a kid anymore. You're going to watch it and say, why the fuck did I like that?
Yeah, and that's another thing. Do you guys agree with me that most of the movies you loved as a little kid, it's best you don't watch them again and just keep your memories warm and fuzzy in the cabinet?
No, some of the movies I liked when I was a kid are still really good. I'm talking like Pink Floyd's The Wall, Lawrence of Arabia, Frog Dreaming.
Frog Dreaming. I wish they would. You don't know how many times I've bit that Brian Trenchard Smith to get that shit out.
Oh, yeah.
I'm older than you guys, so when I was a kid and I was 6, 7, 8 years old, it was all the Godzilla movies coming down Chiller Theater and all those great black and white creature features from the 50s.
You were right at the prime monster kid time.
Oh, yeah. I was a monster kid. There is no doubt about it. I mean, I grew up with Chilly Billy Cardelli and just loved it. I mean, that was prime era for me. And don't forget, at the same time, first run Outer Limits, first run Twilight Zone. And then we go a little
and don't forget Famous Monsters of Film Land, the Aurora Monster Kit.
You got the Auroras. I was never a Monster Kit fan. I wasn't that coordinated. But I loved anything monsters. The books for sure.
Yeah. You had the Aurora Monster Kid kits. You had fucking Famous Monsters of Filmland. You had the Horror Host in their first, really in their prime.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for God's sake, yeah.
Orgus the Magnificent, Chilly Billy.
Well, remember 2 or 3 years ago when I got to Monster Bash that one year? Who was the first person I saw? And who was the last person I saw before he left?
Yeah, Chilly Billy.
And you know what I said to him? Both times? Thank you. Thank you. Because being a kid in braces and not being able to really, he was family. I mean, all of that was family.
Yeah.
And I loved the monsters, and I loved it. And forever, ever shaped me into becoming a great fan of film.
And I can talk about one of Doc's biggest addictions, which sadly, because it's a very hard to find his fix on that, and that would be Castle Films.
Yeah, Castle Films are really expensive or really hard to find in very in good condition. I've got Varan the Unbelievable, and I also have Geezer the Three-Headed Monster. I would love to get Godzilla vs. Mothra, but the asking price on that is through the roof.
You know what, Doc? God damn it, I don't know whatever happened to them. But when I was a kid, we had a projector. I had like 20 or 30 of those.
Nice.
I think we lost them.
And there were
three
kinds of them. They were the 8mm silent, 8mm sound, and the Holy Grail ones, which, if you can find any of those for under $100, you're a god on yourself. And that is the 60mm ones that ran about 15 to 20 minutes.
We had the 8mm silence. Okay, we had the silence.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually have several different projectors. I've got a silent 8, a sound 8, and a two full-size working 16mm with sound. I'm pretty prepared.
Yeah. 16mm, Carl, back then, were $25 a pop.
So I never really said this, okay? You guys know that I worked at a drive-in. So it's 1972, and Howard comes in as a customer, and he's talking to my dad, and he says he's the projectionist. And so I go and I talk to him, and I say, you know, back when I was a kid, we used to have these Castle films. And we had a projector, and I put them on. And he says, oh, did you like doing that? I said, yeah. And I guess that was the reason why it was a couple times later he asked my folks if I could work for him. So I had really kind of forgotten that. Until you mentioned Castle Films. But I guess that's one of the reasons he asked me. I don't know that for sure, but I think so.
And isn't it funny how much film reels and drive-in speakers go for today?
Well, if you can actually get some really, really good deals. I mean, I've got the 16-millimeter version of The Black Hole for $5 at our local Goodwill. But other places, you know,
I'm just talking the reels themselves, the giant steel reels.
Yeah, those are pretty expensive. It's kind of shocking.
And I don't know how many of those I touched in my career. Good God.
And I'm still kicking myself for not getting one of this. Only 1 year this guy showed up. He was selling old drive-in speakers that were salvaged from drive-ins.
Well, you know, they're not making them anymore,
I should have just got one so I could have one to hang up.
They're not making those anymore. And so, you know, there's no reason to. I'm sure there are some people that still make them for the drive-ins that are still around, but even the drive-ins that are still around, it's not through the radio and not through speakers.
All drive-ins today are the radio.
Yeah,
there are some speakers that are going for like just starting $20, but then you can get like some of the complete units for $150, and you know, and some of these are actually really, really good condition.
The most expensive ones are the ones that came out in the late '80s, right before the drive-in death. And to keep from people, how big a problem was that at the drive-in? People either getting drunk, pissed, or just being stupid, just ripping the fucking speakers off of the post.
Oh, listen, during a year, they have to replace at least 5 to 10 speakers a year at Livestone. At least.
Yeah. So the last ones, what I'm talking about, 86, were fit with a headphone jack. And you could hook up the speakers to the sound cables like headphones. Those are the ones that will cost you the most. And can you guys guess why?
Because you could put them, you could use them as speakers.
Yeah, you could hook them and use a speaker without any really work at all.
Yeah. And they were great. Livestone never had them, but I have run across them once or twice.
That's what we love. I love collecting the weird little shit, not the ones that everyone else loves. Like, I would kill for one of those orange monster books, but those things are out of anyone's price range unless they're a fucking serious money guy, aren't they, Doc?
Are you talking about the Crestwood Monster series? Yeah. There's sometimes I'm willing to pay a crazy price for something, but it has to be an item that I want, like, seriously and desperately. I got the Crestwood Godzilla book for about $30. The King Kong is currently going for $40, and the Creature from Black Lagoon is about $70.
Yeah. Do you remember when I found the deadly mantis at the Monster Bash? This is the first time I ever heard him curse, Carl. I said, hey, Doc, look, my deadly mantis. And he looked down, and it was like 130. And he's like, fuck that.
I love the deadly mantis, but not that much.
Well, I remember you basically bowling me over to run for a paperback of Reptilicus.
Yeah. That one, I'm shocked I got for $30.
I am so jealous of that. Seriously. So jealous.
And the weird thing is there's like three or four of the books from that company. And what they would do, they would take your basic kitty monster film like Reptilicus and add a little spice to it. Some people would call it risque. Others would call it just fucking straight up porn.
Yes, and just so everybody knows, there were no boobies in Reptilicus.
No, no boobies.
Yes, and they had... The most infamous scene is where the hero is fighting Reptilicus in an airplane and shooting missiles about it. And all he can think about in that situation, Carl, is how big the heroine's titties was and how good her mouth fell on his dick the night before.
So do you guys remember or know of there was a period, and it was basically about 69 to about 73, where science fiction writers wrote these books that were basically sci-fi porn. And there was a company, there were a couple companies, and I forget what the one was. I think one was Fantasia's Press or something like that. And I think it was connected to Playboy. And so you had, you know, people like...
Playboy had its own, too. There was Fantasia Press and Playboy Press.
Yeah. But there was Van Gogh and one of my favorite authors, a guy by the name of Charles Platt, did a novel called Gas. Okay, and I had the original of that, and I've lost it. Okay, do you want to guess the last price I saw for the first printing of that on Fantasia's Press?
Is that Gas, the one based on the Roger Corman movie?
No, this has nothing to do with the Corman movie. What this is the basic story is there's this guy. He works at a chemical plant, and they're developing a weapon, which is basically an aphrodisiac. And and it basically goes off, and it covers all of England. And basically, not only does it become an orgy, but it really gets twisted. You know, I mean, nobody has any compunction with animals, you know, with anything, right? And it is fucking filthy, okay? So, hold on, let me finish. So, I saw a couple years ago on eBay, okay, that somebody had the original print of this, Fantasia. Now, I've got the reprint of it now, and unfortunately, it's not worth nearly as much. But do you want to guess how much, you know, the first bid was supposed to be for this book? You want to get
300.
Doc, do you want to guess?
I'm thinking about 1,000.
Doc is closer. 1,400.
Good God.
Ooh. 1,400.
Well, you find any of Ed Wood's gay porn books or any of his regular porn writing, the gay porn books, because they're harder to find, go for around $600 to $700. The novel adaptation of Orgy of the Dead I seen that at Monster Bash once. The guy wanted $350 for it.
Yeah, I saw it too. You showed that to me there. I mean, there are things out there that, and I'm not saying anyone bid at that thing, okay? And I'm not saying he got the money for it. But you know, I mean, these things, this is what people look for, the really, really obscure stuff. I mean, you know, so let's ask a question. If there was something really obscure you could get your hands on, and the price was no option, what would it be?
Oh, that's easy. The H.B. Lewis Blood Trilogy novel series.
Okay, Doc?
For me, I would have to say it's kind of like it's a big mega whammy I'm going to go with. I would have to say all of Kurosawa's films, copies of all of Kurosawa's films, plus all of Toho's Giant Monster films and Tokusatsu films. If I could find that, all of those working format for at a really good price, you better believe I'd buy it. And it would be upwards of at least, looking at everything now and how close the Kurosawa was, you're talking at least $1,500, $1,600 at least.
Okay.
For all those.
Criterion, I think, I forget how many years ago, they put out a pretty decent set of all the films they owned of Kurosawa.
Yeah, and it went out really fast, and at the time it was $300, and now you can't find it anywhere for cheaper than $800.
Right, because they've lost the rights to a few of the films in the box.
Yep.
Well, I'll tell you what. This is what I would want. And I go back to my time with Howard at the drive-in. I actually had this in my hand. Okay? But he had, what I would like is a set of the actual acetates of the Betty Page shorts. I had this in my head, one or two of them. They're little little reels. They're about 10-minute films. But she did a number of them. I'd like a complete set in acetate, okay, with a projector.
Nice.
Yeah, the loops are hard to find because they were sold under the table, and let's just say you died and someone found it, they'd be like, ooh, porn, throw it in the garbage.
Yeah, and a lot of them are lost, of course. I haven't even tried to find what that would be worth. But you know, you could find some of them on DVD, and you could find a couple of them. But to have a complete set on acetate of all the Betty Page stuff, because I saw about six or seven of them.
The two most expensive things that I've seen on eBay were... One 16-millimeter print of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and it was going for like $350.
Well,
it was four reels, and you had to get the fucker there yourself.
Right.
But the most expensive, it was like $600-$700. And it was a 35-millimeter print of Mothra.
Oh, nice.
I paid an insane amount of money for that. There is one thing that I'm kicking myself every single morning that I wake up, that I kick myself for getting rid of when I was younger. I had a Sega Genesis. For all of our European listeners, that's the Sega Mega Drive. There was a game called Musha Aleste that I would play this game insane amount every single day. I got to the point where I could beat it without losing one life on hard. It was my all-time favorite video game, and currently it's going for on eBay for $137.50. all the way up to $600 for an original cart.
Yeah.
I am kicking myself because I traded my Sega Genesis in for a PlayStation 1 so I could get Resident Evil. And I always thought, oh yeah, I can buy this game again. But at the time I can save up $500, it's gonna be about $1,000. I'm overestimating.
The good news is you're starting to see the market for the NES, the Super NES, and the Sega Genesis starting to die.
Yeah. I mean, the base price is $132, so that's actually an extreme improvement. There were times where I saw it starting $600 to $1,000 for this one game.
Well, you know what? I've also mentioned this before, but the one thing I really regret giving up is I had a PC game. We've talked about it. Harlan Ellison's "I Have No Mouth, But I Must Scream," and I just let it go. You know, I don't know what happened to it. But I had a friend of mine years ago, 10 years ago or so, go to a gaming and saw a copy of it and called me. They wanted like $200 or $250 for it, and I said, "No fucking way am I paying that." But yeah, that's the one thing I had at one point that I'm really pissed off I don't have anymore.
I don't blame you. But yeah, collecting can be dangerous because there's too many people willing to pay stupid amounts of money for something that really isn't worth the price.
But
well,
you know what? If you want it and you have the money, I can understand why you would pay it.
Yeah, like, I'm a huge Splatterhouse fan. Splatterhouse 2 came to Genesis. Sega Genesis, believe it or not, I found that at our local Goodwill for $3. I had a copy of Splatterhouse 3 with the manual and everything. I sold it off when I traded it for my PlayStation 1. And I decided to get it again, but the only place I could find it at the time was at a video game convention. So I paid $60 for the game, the box, and no manual. I mean, I really am that much of a fan of Splatterhouse. But $500
for... Well, if you have Xbox 360 or PS3, get the latest Splatterhouse game out. Splatterhouse 1, 2, and 3 are unlockables on it.
Oh, I know, but it's not the same. I need that cartridge. I'm just weird like that every once in a while. Fortunately, I can settle for other things like you were saying, like a re-release. But with just a couple items, I need original. I'm just crazy like that sometimes.
Yeah. Oh, don't worry. We all have that, what I call the my copy syndrome.
Yeah.
So here's something that's
a little off topic. But my family collected everything, okay? I mean, every one of us collected something. But my father, you know, after he had the music store for a while, got into this thing where he collected music boxes. But not just music boxes, but orchestrions and automatons. He had roller organs. He had all this shit, right? And it's unbelievable what he had. And he was part of a thing called the Music Box Society. So one year, we go to Minneapolis, St. Paul, as a family. And we went to this convention. Now, you talk about insane collectors. So a guy, a rich guy, We went through his house, and it was filled with these automatons, you know, that would play violins and shit, and all this orchestrions and that sort of thing. And he had this whole house filled. So he tells the story that his neighbors all complained. So you know what he did? And he lived on a cul-de-sac. He bought all the fucking houses around him. He rents them out, with a specific thing saying they can't complain about the noise. Now, how insane is that?
Well, she's got that much money, man, as well.
But yeah, I have seen sometimes collectors and dealers get together at Monster Bash, and it's like some fucking fight out of a martial arts movie.
Oh, yeah. Or like going to Walmart on Black Friday. Yeah, no shit.
Yeah, except with haggling.
Oh,
the
haggling.
The most brutal, vicious haggler I've ever seen in my life is Josh. That boy cuts to the bone in blood, doesn't he, Doc?
You know, he does. You know, I'll haggle a little bit, but I look at it, you know, with the Bash crew, it's like, this is how they make their money. This is how most of them make their money. So I am not going to cut into profits unless it's really necessary. I think I've only haggled maybe twice in all the years I've gone. Because the stuff that I like to get, really, the price on prices that are really just aren't that high in the stuff, because like it's just so weird and offbeat. They're like, you actually like this? Take it for free. Okay. No, they're not for free, but like close enough to it.
So I got a story about this. This is on the other side. So for years, I sold records. And I did so as sort of a clearinghouse for dealers, right? And so I knew I had something that was worth 10, 20 bucks. I'd sell for a buck, right? And they could make money on it. But this one dealer, and I loved him, okay? Shelly Weltman, bless his soul, he's now no longer with us. But Shelly would come to my place, pick up like, I knew it was $25, $30 record. I'll give you a quarter for it. Like, fuck you, Shelly. You know, no, you're not giving me. So he was always lowballing. So one time we're arguing, and like I'm not moving. I'm not moving. And he says, what are you? A New York Jew? He said, and I said, no, but I read it from a rabbi in Brooklyn. Does that fucking count? And he looked at me like, okay, fine, I'll give you a buck. And he never, ever, ever tried to lowball me again. Ever. Great story.
Yeah, you know, come on, give me a break here. Fuck you. It's like
you
I found the soundtrack on vinyl mint with the fucking book still inside of it for $30. And Josh jumped in, come on, man, could you give me a cheaper? I'm like, shut the fuck up. Come on, man, can you give me cheaper? Josh, shut the fuck up. There's some titles I'll fight to get cheaper, but and I know how much and how rare a fucking copy of El Topo with the book is.
And that's on Apple, right?
Yeah.
What kind of condition? Was it mint, Myers?
Oh, God, yeah, it's imperfect.
Okay. Josh,
the only reason that the book is so rare to find in it is that it suffers from shitty glue syndrome, which
right. If
you collect paperbacks and stuff and anything from the 70s, you know that there are some companies who use this shitty cheap glue that after so many years turns to fucking dust and your book falls apart.
Yeah. I'm
yeah.
very familiar with
him. Yeah,
that's why the first Joe Bob book is so expensive.
Yeah, and I actually have a book called The Monster Encyclopedia, and I read that thing. It was a soft cover version. I read it tons and tons and tons and tons and tons. But the glue in it was, it literally disintegrated. It fell apart. And I was like, no! So 11 years ago, I was with a girl, and she worked at a bookstore, and she was able to get a copy for me on hardcover, which made me so very, very happy. But it's kind of sad that some really, really good books are put together very badly.
Well,
yeah.
Let me put it this way. How many pieces do you think my Psychotronic Encyclopedia is in, which is paperback? How many different segments need to be glued together? You want to guess?
If you're lucky, 4.
Okay, Doc?
I would say all of them, every single section.
No, but how many? Come up
at
with
least,
a number.
At least 12.
You're a little over. 9. Ooh. 9.
That's why a lot of stuff is right now. They caused the companies cheap ass them when they made them.
Oh, yeah.
Like.
Absolutely.
Like something that Doc loves to death, and that is Shogun Warriors. They made them so cheap and shitty that it's hard to fucking find one in complete condition because the plastic they use are so cheap and shitty that if you fart on the plastic too close to it, they'll crumble.
Yeah, it becomes very brittle. Yeah, understood.
And plus it being the first Godzilla toy to ever be released in the U.S., yes, that is a very confusing fucking question. How come it took the 1970s to get any Godzilla toys over here?
Licensing. That's why.
Yeah.
It's all licensed. I mean, that's a simple question. Now, why didn't they license it? That's the question.
Yeah, but it was during, I'm talking about during the Monster Mania most thing, you know, when Godzilla movies were at their most popular over here. No one even tried to get the license.
When I was a kid, I wanted Godzilla toys.
Yeah.
I literally wanted
them.
That's
what I'm saying.
Okay, but they weren't here. And the thing is, Toho didn't think it was worthwhile to make a deal with the U.S. toy company to license them so they could make it. That's why it never happened. You can blame Toho on this. They thought it was just.
And the weird thing about the Shogun Warriors, and I think Doc will confirm this for me, is how many shows were they taken from? 3 or 4 different shows? I know one of them was based on Giant Robot Mazinger Z. From the 60s.
Yeah, one of them was, I think one of them was Bravery Dean also, and then there, one of them was Mazinger, and I can't remember where the third one was for the lightning.
Yeah. So basically, Carl, they took 3 different franchises and Godzilla, well, 4 different franchises, and just put them out.
Mm-hmm.
Which also leads to the most expensive Transformers toy, which was they took a Robotech plane and they just slapped the name Jetfire on it. If you get the first one, this first one, it has all of the fucking Robotech markings still on it. They didn't even change anything.
I have a story about that. I actually had when I was a kid, its arm fell off, but never got it fixed. I ended up crashing it after a while. And I saw another one out in the wild next weekend, $150 used, and it was in shitty condition.
Go ahead, finish up, though. Sorry.
And, you know, it's just one of those, it would be nice to have it back, but not for $150.
Well, I'll tell you one. Okay, I did have this. They had a Thunderbirds action set that I think, forget who put it out. Maybe it was Parker Brothers. I'm not sure.
Ideal.
But it had the, was it Ideal? Okay, it had the plane. It had the characters. you know, at everything. And I had that when I was a kid. Now, I have no idea what it's worth. I don't have any idea. But I would love to have that again.
In the U.S., it's not worth very much. But in the U.K., anything Gary Anderson is going to cost you up the ass.
You know, one thing I do have, which I picked up very, very cheaply, is I have an LP that has two episodes, one on one side, one on the other, audio of two of his programs. And that I just love. I fucking love that. That, see, you talk about God's Transformers and that. For my generation, growing up as a kid in the 60s, It was Gerry Anderson. It was marionettes for me, man. Anything like that, I fucking loved. I loved those when I was a kid.
Well, I brought those up as the bizarre way that they just mix franchises and do everything together, and just so they could have just a toy to throw out to the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Oh, very cool. Very cool.
Yeah, it's 10:51, and I can tell Carl's already getting tired because it's pretty much almost time for him to say, I'm going to bed for the whole night, and then wake up 4 hours later going, God damn it, son of a bitch.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah.
I'll try to stay up until like 11:30. Try. I'm not saying I will.
But I hope you enjoyed this little bit on collecting and stuff like that and why we try. We want to get things cheap, but then we have the idiot marks who run in and just throw money at everything, going, here, take my money. And then we're like, whoa, wait a minute, you're fucking up for everybody. No, I'm not, I'm getting my thing. If you do start paying prices like $100 for this or that, you're fucking it up for everybody. Because all it takes is for the word to go around from one dealer that, hey, Carl paid $100 for that LP. Well, what? He did? You mean someone will buy it for $100? I'll price it as $100.
Oh, yeah. Trust me, that's what happens.
Like, you know, you ever watch a YouTube show, Middle Jesus Rocks, Doc?
Yes, I have. I like the show. He collects vintage video, or retro video games. I almost said vintage.
Yeah. Well, he used to do this thing on that show, Carl, called Hidden Gems, and he had to stop it. You know why?
Why?
Every time that he did a Hidden Gem video, every game that he mentioned on those shows spiked at least 100% in price as soon as his show hit.
And also, the video game nerd, when he mentioned stuff, it tripled. Crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. I'm glad he caught that and he stopped that. Good.
Well, he didn't catch it. He had to, because all the gamers were blaming him and not the greedy fucking fucks who were charging the prices. It's your fault.
Well, he got the word. He did, you know, he got misled for it, but he got the word.
Yeah. And we'll see you Sunday, and big things are brewing with 300 episodes. Maybe a new intro, maybe new this. Maybe we'll finally fire Carl for making kids cry. Who knows?
I'll tell you, that just cracked me up because I could never see Carl making a child cry. I just couldn't. I don't know.
In fact, there's a story where there's this one kid, you know, a little baby, a friend of mine, started crying when I went up to say hello to her. And like I said, oh, scary man with beard, we'll back away now. We're going away. Bye.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do that.
And to close the show out and to say goodnight, this is my favorite Monster Bash story about Carl, Doc. It was close to midnight, and Juan Reese was on during comedy. Carl was sleeping. Blah, 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 blah. Don Reese said, blah, 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 blah. He's joking. And Frank Zappa, Carl, huh? He woke up from the dead sleep as soon as he heard the word Frank Zappa. That's a thing. And with that, good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Open the circuit to the wave motion gun. Open the circuit.
Blood chamber pressure increases. It's at full.
All the ship's energy is now in the wave motion gun.
I doubt anyone here would recognize civic virtue if it reached up and bit you in the ass.
Oh, did I hurt your feelings?
Blue Magneto's right. There's a war coming.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger.
You sure you're on the right side?